He paused migration from, quote, third world countries. He posted on social media after the death of a National Guard member allegedly shot by an Afghan national. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Jaime Martinez, artificial intelligence companies are spending hundreds of billions of dollars on technology most people don't pay for. Many companies are also taking out big loans to do it. What's the risk to the wider economy? Also, Giles Martin, son of Beatles producer George Martin, talks about remixing his father's work. It's Friday, November 28th. On this day in 1895, J. Frank Duryea won the first American car race. The prize was $2,000. Another $500 went to the best name for what he was driving, motorcycles. So close, yet so far. News is next.
Live from NPR News, I'm Janine Herbst. One of the two National Guard members shot blocks from the White House Wednesday has died. President Trump made the announcement on a Thanksgiving call to military units last night. NPR's Sage Miller is traveling with the president.
Trump called Guardswoman Sarah Beckstrom a highly respected, young, magnificent person.
She was savagely attacked. She's dead. She's not with us. Incredible person. Outstanding in every single way, in every department.
20-year-old Beckstrom volunteered to be on duty for Thanksgiving. She was on patrol a few blocks from the White House when a gunman opened fire. The gunman struck Beckstrom and 24-year-old Guardsman Andrew Wolf. Trump says Wolf remains in critical condition and is fighting for his life. Trump also says that he spoke with Beckstrom's family following the loss of their loved one. Sage Miller, NPR News.
Pope Leo is in Turkey visiting a site where 1,700 years ago, early Christians produced the creed that's still spoken in churches today. NPR's Ruth Sherlock is traveling with the Pope.
Pope Leo will visit the archaeological ruins in Turkey's İznik that are believed to be the site where, in the year 325, bishops gathered from around the Roman Empire and settled upon the Nicene Creed. The statement of Christian faith that commits to believing in one God is still spoken in churches today. It's a unifying document for a faith that has seen schisms throughout the ages into many different denominations. Pope Leo will pray at the site of the Nicene Creed alongside Patriarch Bartholomew, the spiritual leader of the world's Orthodox Christians. Pope Leo hopes this moment will be a call for unity. Ruth Sherlock, NPR News, Turkey.
The death toll from a massive fire that tore through a public housing complex in Hong Kong has risen to at least 128. Cherise Pham reports bodies are still being recovered from the wreckage today, 2 days after the fire started.
Rescue efforts have now shifted to recovery operations. Many of the deceased haven't been fully identified, and more than a dozen burned bodies remain in the buildings, authorities said at a press conference. The fire is one of the deadliest in the city's history. The apartment complex had been under renovation and was covered in bamboo scaffolding and netting. Authorities initially suspected that the netting was a problem, but they now say it met fire-resistant standards. Other construction material is believed to have spread the fire. Fire alarms also failed to operate properly, according to public broadcaster RTHK. Police have arrested three people from the contract company on suspicion of manslaughter. For NPR News, I'm Cherise Pham in Hong Kong.
You're listening to NPR News from Washington. Measles deaths dropped by 88% around the world since the year 2000 as a result of vaccination efforts. That's according to a new report from the World Health Organization. NPR's Maria Godoy has more.
The report says nearly 59 million lives have been saved by the measles vaccine since 2000. That's more than any other childhood vaccine of the past 50 years. Even so, an estimated 95,000 people, mostly children under age 5, died from measles last year. While that death toll is among the lowest in recent decades, WHO officials say it's still unacceptably high for a vaccine-preventable disease. Dr. Kate O'Brien of the WHO said measles cases serve as an alarm for public health officials.
Unfortunately, for much of the world, the alarms are ringing. Measles cases are surging, outbreaks are increasing, and too many children remain unprotected.
She says the report underscores the urgent need to vaccinate children around the world against measles. Maria Godoy, NPR News.
In Indonesia, rescue crews are dealing with damaged bridges and roads, along with a lack of heavy equipment, as they try to search for victims from a cyclone that caused flooding and landslides. At least 174 people have died. Dozens are listed as missing after rivers burst their banks in northern Sumatra province this week from monsoon rains, tearing through villages and submerging thousands of homes and buildings, also in Sumatra and Aceh. Forecasters say rain from the tropical cyclone is expected to last for several days. I'm Janine Herbst, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Bayer. Bayer is dedicated to delivering breakthroughs that save lives and feed the world using the scientific process. Learn more at sciencedelivers.com. This is NPR.
Hey, it's News Director Chelsea Perkins from KAXE, and we are celebrating. Because of you, we blew our Give to the Max Day fundraising goal out of the water. Your support does more than keep the lights on. It powers trusted local journalism rooted right here in northern Minnesota. It helps our news desk tell the stories that matter, ask the questions that need to be asked, and amplify voices you don't hear anywhere else. Every dollar that you gave has quadrupled the power thanks to our participation in the National Newsmatch program through the Institute of Nonprofit News. This is an investment in people-powered news, community connection, and the future of public media. There's still time to support KAXE this year. You can make a year-end gift anytime through December 31st at KAXE.org. From all of us at KAXE, thank you for believing in local news. And thank you for making this work possible.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Amy Martinez in Culver City, California. One of the National Guard members shot during an attack in the nation's capital has died. Sarah Beckstrom was 20 years old. The Trump administration is responding by launching a sweeping re-examination of green cards issued to immigrants from 19 countries. And Trump has since called for even wider immigration restrictions. Coming up, we'll speak with an Army National Guard veteran who is part of a group supporting Afghan refugees in the U.S. First, though, NPR's Brian Mann joins me. Brian, tell us about Sarah.
Yeah, she was an Army specialist from Somersville, West Virginia. She joined the service in 2023. And speaking last night, President Trump described her as an incredible person in every single way. He made the announcement Beckstrom had died during a conference call with military leaders.
She's no longer with us. She's looking down at us right now. Her parents are with her. It's just happened. She was savagely attacked. She's dead.
West Virginia Governor Patrick Morrissey said Beckstrom showed strength and character that define the very best of the West Virginia National Guard. A second Guard member, 24-year-old Andrew Wolf, is still in critical condition after undergoing surgery. And Trump said last night that Wolf is fighting for his life.
Okay, now about the alleged gunman. Any clues on why?
We don't know a motive for this attack. Federal officials say Rachmanullah Lakhanwal drove across the U.S. from his residence in Washington state, then allegedly attacked these guard members with a handgun. Lakhanwal served in Afghanistan alongside U.S. forces. A nonprofit group that works with refugees called Afghan Evac issued a statement saying Lakhanwal was part of an elite counterterrorism group that had ties to the CIA. Yesterday, CIA Director John Ratcliffe confirmed Lakhanwal was allowed into the U.S., and I'm quoting here, due to his prior work with the U.S. government, including the CIA. He applied for asylum in the Biden years and was granted asylum protection in April of this year under the Trump administration.
And President Trump has had a lot to say about immigration policy.
Absolutely. President Trump posted yesterday on social media that he plans to pause migration into the U.S. from what he described as all third world countries. He called for an effort to denaturalize migrants and deport foreign nationals. In a separate statement posted on social media, John Edlow, head of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, said he's launching a full-scale, rigorous examination of every green card for aliens from every country of concern. That appears to target 19 countries that include Afghanistan, but also completely unrelated countries like Haiti, Sierra Leone, and Venezuela. The Trump administration's narrative here appears to be that Lacanwal was allowed into the U.S. without proper vetting, suggesting this could be a widespread problem. Here's FBI Director Kash Patel speaking yesterday.
This individual is in this country for one reason and one reason alone, because of the disastrous withdrawal from the Biden administration and the failure to vet. Anyway, in any way, shape, or form, this individual and countless others.
But sources, including that nonprofit group Afghan Evac, have told NPR that Lacanwal would have been scrutinized repeatedly in Afghanistan and also before coming to the U.S. Experts say refugees allowed into the U.S. were vetted, and that process was later audited by the FBI and other agencies. They found it to be an imperfect but thorough and competent review process. And experts also point out the fact that the majority of refugees from Afghanistan are living in the U.S. peacefully.
That's NPR's Brian Mann. Brian, thanks.
Thanks so much.
Both victims of the shooting grew up in West Virginia. Army Specialist Sarah Beckstrom was from Webster County, and Staff Sergeant Andrew Wolf is from the Martinsburg area. NPR's Dave Mistich went to Wolf's hometown to hear from the community.
Most everywhere around Martinsburg, West Virginia, was closed for the Thanksgiving holiday. But in the handful of bars and restaurants that were open yesterday evening, Army Specialist Sarah Beckstrom and Staff Sergeant Andrew Wolf were on many minds. Amy Fraley was behind the bar at the Big Apple Lounge.
It's tragic. They're young. It's unnecessary. It's heartbreaking.
The Big Apple sits less than a mile away from Musselman High School in Inwood, where Wolf attended.
I saw something online where the family was stating there is no GoFundMe set up, that they're just asking love, prayers, and support, and in this community for that, they're in a good place for it.
Just a few miles away sits the Eastern West Virginia Regional Airport, where Wolf was stationed with the 167th Airlift Wing. Nicholas Deal is the executive director of the airport. He told me he says a little prayer when planes carrying guardsmen take off.
You know, when I heard some of our guardsmen were going to be deployed, I said a prayer for them too.
Jason Barrett serves the Martinsburg area as a Republican in the West Virginia Senate. Like many others, he was wondering what motivated the suspect in Wednesday's shooting.
It's certainly something that is baffling to me, and I think a lot of people, to why anyone would want to just go out and, in this case, to have a vicious and unprovoked attack on two people who are there merely and solely to protect others.
Barrett says the conversation is warranted on the Guard's continued deployment to D.C., but he says the shooting also does show the need for the nation's capital to be kept safe. For now, though, he says his focus, like others here I spoke with, is on supporting the Wolf and Beckstrom families. Dave Mistich, NPR News, Martinsburg, West Virginia.
We're going to turn now to how the Trump administration is launching a new immigration crackdown following the deadly attack targeting National Guard troops near the White House. Christopher Purdy joins us now. He's an Army National Guard veteran and the founder of the Chamberlain Network. It's a pro-democracy veterans group. He's also part of the Evacuate Our Allies Coalition, which supports Afghan refugees in the United States. Christopher, last night President Trump threatened to permanently pause migration from poorer nations. If that were to happen, would it make America any safer, as the president claims it would?
Thanks. Well, first, I want to say my condolences to the Beckstrom family. Specialist Beckstrom represented the best of Americans, those few who'd volunteer to serve our country in uniform. And when we look around and see why these folks are being deployed to our cities, we have to wonder now, what is the purpose? And especially that this is, coming out that an Afghan did this horrible act. We know that rejecting immigrants into this country is not going to make us safer. The folks who were brought in under the 2021 evacuation were thoroughly vetted, as your previous speaker said, and there were plenty of opportunities for Congress to act and re-vet these folks in 22 and 23 by passing the African Adjustment Act, but they didn't do it. And we have to ask ourselves, what are we going to do about that now?
I was going to ask you about the mission of the National Guard's D.C. deployment, if it's worth it, considering what has now happened.
Yeah, every time a soldier goes out on patrol, elected leaders who put them out on in uniform on the streets have to ask themselves, is this worth it? And I can't think of a reason why, after seeing this attack, that any elected leader would say this is worth it. We know that if crime is an issue, that a local elected officials should be putting out law enforcement officers. There are 100,000, over 100,000 federal law enforcement officers who can do this job better than the National Guard. And they should be the ones out there stopping crime, not putting our service members, especially from outside of the district, into D.C.
So considering, Christopher, as you just admitted, that you're wondering if it's worth it, the president also ordered 500 more troops to be deployed to Washington, to D.C. What do you think? Would more make a difference somehow?
No. Unfortunately, these troops are coming in. They're going to escalate the situation. The president only knows how to escalate in this environment. What would be helpful is if governors took a look at their forces and forces that they volunteered to go to D.C. and see, is this really the best use of my National Guard? And I'd hope that they'd reconsider this deployment and bring them back.
So let's turn now to how this shooting is affecting Afghans, both those already in the U.S. and those seeking to enter. Your group supports Afghan immigrants and refugees whose immigration requests the Trump administration says it's going to stop. What will that mean for them?
There are thousands of Afghans who are around the world right now waiting for America to fulfill its promise to them, a promise that we gave over a handshake over 20 years. And after 2021, we worked really hard to fulfill that promise. These thousands of Afghans are now going to have to wait further and potentially have risked their lives by the Taliban. And that is incredibly dangerous, not only to the Afghans themselves, but also to our national security. Our partners are going to be looking at this and seeing if we ever have a future conflict, will the United States be there for me, or will they turn their back on me?
Considering, though, that the suspected shooter previously served in one of Afghanistan's elite counterterrorism units operated by the CIA and was granted asylum earlier this year, has the government's vetting been rigorous enough?
So those who came out through Operation Allies Welcome and in the aftermath of the evacuation, they went through rigorous vetting. You mentioned that the Trump administration granted him asylum this year. There was no reason for anyone to doubt that he had a credible fear of persecution, given his role with the CIA. But there are, ways to improve this. There are ways to, help the folks who are here, who have been brought over, who have not been granted legal permanent residency, which creates an enormous amount of stress on Afghan communities or any immigrant community. So I think that the vetting was solid and was good. We have to wait to see what the motive is of this the shooter.
Just a few seconds left here, Christopher. You mentioned how for you it's important that America, the United States, kind of fulfills its promise it's made to Afghans that have helped the United States. If the United States doesn't do this, do you feel it is a stain on the country's world legacy, world reputation?
Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, I think the way that we have managed this evacuation from the beginning, it's been a stain. And so this is just another continued attack on our American values by shutting down immigration, by stopping the vetting and the processing of special immigrant visas. This is really going to hurt our image in the world.
Christopher Purdy is the founder of the Chamberlain Network. He's also worked on Afghan resettlement in the U.S. Christopher, thanks again for your time. This is NPR News. Thank you.
Green Cheese listeners know how important it is to support stations like KAXE KBXE.
Anyone who can, be sure to donate, because as all of us know, we listen to this, Green Cheese, and all the other programming on the stations. We really, really love it and don't want anything to happen to it, so it's really important to give what you can.
One thing I wanted to do is I wanted to talk to everybody out there. Radio is important when it's unique and it's interesting and it's local, and given your current funding situation, everybody out there should be doing something about that, no matter how little it is. If everybody did something, it makes a tremendous difference. Think about Saturday nights with no green cheese. That sounds terrible.
It would be so boring.
This is the queen, and I'm going to make an edict. All cheeses, get your checkbooks out and send in some money to our favorite station and show, and my check will be in the mail tomorrow.
Donate now at KAXE.org.
Country music's Grand Ole Opry celebrated its 100th anniversary this week. We'll feature interviews with two country stars who were members of the Opry, bluegrass musician Earl Scruggs, who perfected the three-finger style banjo picking, and Loretta Lynn, who had 16 number one hits. Join us.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from the University of Maryland Libraries, committed to reimagining learning, advancing the public good, and empowering research that creates a better future for everyone. More at lib.umd.edu. From the Kresge Foundation with Pathbreakers, a podcast about transforming communities through innovation, from revolutionizing higher education to supporting artists who are driving change. Pathbreakers is available on podcast platforms. And from Imaginable Futures, funding programs in the U.S. with the goal of ensuring young children and their parents get the education they need to thrive. Learn more at imaginablefutures.com. This is NPR.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Amy Martinez.
And I'm Layla Faldin.
Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields.
Years after the death of John Lennon, the three surviving Beatles worked on a documentary about the band. It aired in 1995, and it concluded with what seemed to be the end of the Beatles story. But around that same time, Lennon's widow, Yoko Ono, told them that she had a cassette with a few incomplete songs that John had been working on. Paul, George, and Ringo took those sketches into a studio, something they never thought they'd do together again. They worked their magic and gave the world three final Beatles songs. That documentary, The Beatles Anthology, is now streaming on Disney Plus with a new bonus episode largely about those last Beatles songs.
The good thing about the anthology and the CDs is that it's four of us. Now, even though John's not here, he's here.
I spoke with someone who remixed the sound for the docuseries, and he's a familiar name. Giles Martin is the son of the late Sir George Martin, who produced the Beatles albums.
My first ever Beatles experience was working on the anthology with my dad, I think 30 years ago now, which is when I left college. I came to this, actually, I came to the room I'm sitting talking to you in from Abbey Road.
Oh, amazing.
And came in, and it's the first time I'd ever watched someone press play on a tape machine and Beatles songs came out.
And now you're remixing Beatles albums in recent years on your own, and you're essentially changing your father's work. What guides you when you're making those decisions?
You know, there's different technology now, and what I say to people about that is that music doesn't get old. You know, we get old around music, and a recording is that. A recording is time travel.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away.
So when Paul McCartney's singing Yesterday in 1965, he's, what, 24 years old? He'll always be 24 years old singing Yesterday.
Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be.
So, you know, he's much younger than Ed Sheeran is. So my approach to mixing him is to keep it as fresh and as live as possible, and to really A lot of the work I do with the Beatles is actually taking away the technology that inhibited them in the first place.
In the process of watching this documentary, I mean, you see your father hard at work. What's that like for you?
It's lovely, actually. People ask me a lot, is it emotional? It's not, not really. I miss him because I'm so similar to him in lots of ways, and that's a great thing to talk about, a life experience with someone that you're close to. We were very close as father and son. I sound like him. I kind of look like him. I'd never intended any of this. You know, I certainly didn't intend to work on Beatles projects. I worked on Get Back, the Peter Jackson documentary. It was kind of our lockdown project. Mm-hmm. And my dad was younger than I am now. And my kids came in and said, oh my God, who's that dad? Looks like you. And I go, well, that's your grandfather.
Aww.
And that was interesting because, you know, he's a man I didn't know because I wasn't even born then.
You were born in 1969 and the Beatles were almost ready to quit by then. Do you have any memories of them personally when you were growing up?
No, I was aware of Paul. My dad, obviously, when I was three, did, I think, Live and Let Die. Mm. And I met them at various different times. Apparently, when I was born, you're going to have to really bleep this out, but I was born the same day as John Lennon. He said to my dad, now you know what sort of is going to turn out to be like. he's probably right. Yeah, they were kind of a dirty word in our household. And that's the funny thing about the Beatles and the Beatles anthology. I think there's been a distorted lens shed of the Beatles by the fact that it was a relationship they all broke up from. And no one leaves a relationship going, you know what, that was amazing. They always go, it was terrible. It was terrible. And the fact of the matter, they had a pretty good time.
When the original documentary was released in the mid-90s, that's when the public got a big surprise, quote-unquote, new Beatles songs, even though Lennon had been dead for 15 years by that point. What were your thoughts on that at the time?
As a fan, I was excited. I had nothing to the Beatles, no ambition to work on any Beatles, and had no proprietorial relationship with the Beatles at all. And I remember listening to Free as a Bird when it came out. I remember hearing it. I probably shouldn't say this. I was kind of like, I felt sad my dad wasn't involved in that.
Yeah.
But he was involved in anthology and invited me into that. And I think it was cathartic for all of them to go back and look at the photo album, if you like, and experience it again and realize actually it wasn't what they thought it was. It was an incredibly creative and happy time.
The re-release of this documentary series makes me think about just how short the Beatles' recording career actually was, just 8 years. After 1970, they never worked together again. Do you ever think about the music we never got from them?
No, I don't, actually. That's a good question. I don't at all. I don't because I don't think, as my dad used to say, what's surprising is not they broke up, it's the fact that they went for as long as they did.
Really?
And that they made as many songs as they did in that short amount of time. And most of which are really good. And no one would have been able to sustain what they went through. In that period of time, they lived like four careers of great musicians. I don't think about what they would have done, actually, because I think what they did was so remarkable.
Giles Martin, he's a record producer, just like his father, the late Sir George Martin. He worked on music for the Beatles Anthology 2025, now streaming on Disney+. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, especially having me on NPR, which is just amazing.
We love having you on. Thank you. And though the news was rather sad, well, I just had to laugh. I saw the photograph. This is NPR News.
83 years ago this week, nearly 500 people died in Coconut Grove nightclub in Boston. The fire spurred changes in safety codes. Decades later, family members await a permanent memorial.
How could you not keep that a sacred place? How could you not commemorate almost 500 people's deaths?
Remembering those lost that Boston night on All Things Considered from NPR News.
You can hear All Things Considered coming up this afternoon at 4 o'clock. It's here on People Powered KAXE. It is little after 6:29. We'll watch the countdown here. I'm Heidi Holton.
It's the Black Friday edition of the morning show.
That's right. I'm so we're going to be with you for about 4 or 5 minutes, and then John and I are out to the store.
Just dead air.
Yeah. It is exactly 6:30.
Good morning.
Hope you had a good couple of days. Thanksgiving. We've got a lot going on for you today. Actually, not much. We're hoping for you to join us.
Yeah, we'd love to have you join us. Whatever comments you want.
Yeah.
What you had, what you didn't have. Are you going sliding? What are you going to do today?
You can text 218-326-1234. Yesterday, I ran a special from our friends at Interlochen Public Radio in Michigan. They have this podcast called Points North, and they featured this guy who, since 2019, has been watching the sunrise over Lake Superior every day.
Does he photograph it or something, or just watches it?
It's just like his thing. And so Nancy was listening from Twig, and she said, "Today I am thankful for KEXE and for airing the great sunrise program. I grew up in Marquette, and I, until 2016, spent my Thanksgivings in Marquette with my parents. Every Thanksgiving, we talk about our travels to that special spot on Lake Superior. I watched many sunrises there, and I also love to get up early and watch the sunrises over Grand Lake in Twig. Thank you and KEXE for this special Thanksgiving treat. I have a pie sunrise from Grand Lake and sunset from Lake Superior. Oh, a picture. There we go. It's like pie. She sent beautiful photos of swans and the lakeshore. So what a cool story, and I'm glad you liked it on that Thanksgiving morning, Nancy.
Yeah, sunrises are cool. It's the start of a new day, and you hope it's going to be a good day out there when that happens.
Here's what we're looking at today. There is a little bit of flurries as I drove in today. Mostly cloudy skies. Highs 19 to 22. Northwest winds around 5. Cloudy tonight with lows 10 to 15. Saturday, slight chance of snow. Mostly cloudy. Highs near 22. Evening lows 4 to 8. And mostly cloudy on Sunday, highs 15 to 18. Do you know what's missing from that forecast?
Sun.
Most of it? No. That too. But not much wind.
Oh, okay.
At all the next few days, which it's been whipping.
So here's the deal. Yes, the Wednesdays I pick up my grandchildren, and this is something I really love to do, Heidi. You probably haven't done it, but now when you go, I pick up my grandkids on Wednesdays because they live way out of town, and et cetera. So you wait for them. I mean, there's a long line of cars.
You pick them up at school.
As you pick them up, yeah. And as you get closer, they take your number, and then they release that kid out of the building. So they don't all stand out there. And it is so fun watching kids come out after a day of school. Some are sad sacks. Some are just jacked up. It just brings me such great joy. It's unbelievable.
Do you think your granddaughters are different on a Wednesday than other days?
Oh, yeah, because they know they're going to get ice cream. They can look forward to something.
So you have no qualms about every single Wednesday they get ice cream?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. Ice cream and a lot of conversation about how school's going and life in general.
Yep.
Talk about dogs and pets and,
sure,
and things like that. That's a very, very special time for me. And I hope for them. I think it is. You know what we have? Hot fudge sundaes with sprinkles.
Oh.
Kids' hot fudge sundae. Children's hot fudge sundaes with sprinkles.
And sprinkles like color, like Jimmy's?
Yeah.
On a donut. Okay. Hey, I'm sorry I forgot to bring it for you. I made something that you probably like. This, they're called snacking cakes. So they're just sort of easy cake mixes, and you don't do a lot of frosting. You just do the cookbook. It's called Snack Cakes, like an easy thing. So that's what I made yesterday. It's a powdered sugar donut snack cake.
Ooh.
So it tastes like a donut, and then I had made some homemade ice cream.
Oh my gosh, that sounds like a perfect evening.
Yeah.
So what was your day like? Did you make anything special for food?
Yeah,
did you do a traditional turkey or?
I didn't do turkey. I roasted a chicken though. I had a local chicken, and I, you know, stuffed the lemons in the cavity and garlic and parsley and all that stuff, and then I made dressing. I made mashed potatoes.
Oh, that sounds so good.
What other things did I make? No, I can't remember. I think that was plenty. Gravy.
Oh.
I did the stuff early. I made the gravy early and then added the juices and added to it. But so it wasn't all happening at once, even though it wasn't. I kind of took slowly the whole day. And
well,
it wasn't
that's better.
It wasn't for a lot of, it was just me and Tom. So it was kind of nice. So we went, all jammies all day long.
Nice. We went to some friend's house. There were kind of six of us. And the guy who made the turkey took it out and it looked so beautiful, but it looked so different. And I thought, oh, that's so brown. It looks so good. And then he starts tearing the top off the turkey. They bake it in cheesecloth.
Oh.
So they soak the cheesecloth in butter and herbs.
Oh,
and then
so
they stick.
Moist?
Yeah, and they wrap it on so nothing leaves upward, you know, as far as the steam.
Right.
It all stayed. It was spectacular.
Oh, nice. Good. I thought maybe it was a
bad, like a, yeah, no, it was spectacular. It was spectacular. Ate too much, of course.
What did you overdo it on? Just everything?
Yeah. Dressing, potatoes, and chicken, and turkey. Mm-hmm. And
gravy.
And the gravy. And green bean casserole, but a kind of a hybrid, like a state-of-the-art five-star.
I made a salad, but we actually didn't even eat it. You know, it's like there's so much other stuff.
And then we had a pie. Mm. We had a pumpkin pie, which I'm not a big fan of, but this is the best pumpkin pie I've ever had. And then a cranberry pie.
Mm.
But it wasn't just solid cranberries. It was very, very good.
And is it kind of orange in it, too?
No, there wasn't any orange in it, but people stepped aside. I have a reputation around this community for making the best whipped cream. I had a gallery watching me making the whipped cream.
Do you hand whip it?
No.
Oh.
That takes
sounded
two.
Very exciting. If
well,
you had a
there
gallery.
Was. People were just, and then
so they were just watching you at the mixer.
And there's a huge deal. When I was raised, my mom loved whipped cream, and she taught me how to do it, but it was always sugar. Now, I don't know if it was you that told me to use powdered sugar instead.
No.
But powdered sugar makes whipped cream. So if you're out there listening, and I feel like I'm betraying my mom every single whirl of that machine that whips it up. But powdered sugar is the answer. Get rid of the real sugar. It just makes it so fluffy.
Oh.
And, of course, a little vanilla.
Sense. Huh.
Really? Okay. I mean, I do. I feel like I'm just abandoning everything my mom taught me.
I do every once in a while. If I would do whipped cream, I have maple syrup instead.
Yeah. Yeah. That takes the place of all the sugar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not tons of sugar. It's critical not to put too much.
Do you measure? You just.
No.
Okay.
I'm a profesh.
Okay.
You don't need to measure anything.
Is it ever any.
I've made mistakes where I put too much powdered sugar. Like I just tip the bag and something it comes uh-huh. out. And it's, you know, it's not too good, but it was fun to be with people. We had dogs and food and conversation, and it was a good time. Well, I hope everybody else had a good time. You can call us, text us, 218-326-1234. Let us know what you did, what worked. Did you have a turkey that got rock hard, or was it spectacular? Did you? Well, you don't stuff it. You don't stuff a chicken. Or can you stuff a chicken?
I probably could have, but I made it separate. I had made some bread last week that didn't turn out real well, so I thought, I'm going to save it for dressing. So I made croutons out of it.
I want to show you a picture here, Heidi, of something that was very sad yesterday.
Oh, an eagle.
I found an eagle dead on the high side of the road.
Mm.
Just must have just been hit, and it was just sad, and I pulled over, and of course, I didn't even touch it. So I called the 911. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And then they gave me the state patrol, and the state patrol said thank you, and they sent an officer who was going to take it. And my thought was, what did they do when they take it? What do they do research on it?
Maybe they
give Native Americans the feathers? Because they're very, very, very, you know, special. You know, touch, I think it's a federal offense to even act, you know, transport one.
Okay.
I don't think that was a bad thing to say. I think that they may do that.
Okay.
Eagle feathers are sacred, and you don't
find
a dead eagle or happen to see one where the eagle feather falls to the ground.
Yeah. You know, we on Season Watch podcast this week, which you can hear tomorrow at 1:30, Charlie and I talked about something somewhat similar where she stopped to save an owl that had been hit on the road, but she was able to save it. It was like this super hot day where it it was dehydrated or it'd been hit, but you know, but it was still alive. So she wrapped it and had it in her car and then put a seatbelt on it and then called the Raptor Center. She was near the Twin Cities. But when she thinks it was more that maybe she assumed it had been hit, but it might have been dehydrated. It was like a really, really hot day and was on pavement.
Mm-hmm.
So when she took it out of her car, it flew away.
Oh.
It was a fledgling, so she felt terrible that she had transported it.
Oh, took it away from its territory or whatever?
Yeah. But she took a picture, and that picture's available at our website, kexc.org. But we talked a little bit there about what you do when you find an injured bird or animal, and there's a rehabilitation place out of Garrison for northern Minnesota, but the University of Minnesota Raptor Center, and there's some places there that you can call if the birds are alive. I don't know the logistics on that, but there probably is some study of it. Maybe the DNR, maybe conservation officers getting involved as well.
Yeah, and one of my friends said maybe they check it for the bird flu and just see what happened because there was no dead deer around. There was no carcass around, so you don't necessarily see an eagle flying low or standing on the side of the road unless there's something there for them to eat. So I don't know, but it was very sad. It was very sad. They're magnificent. Their claws, talons are unbelievable.
Well, here's a little something I found on this. So if you find a dead eagle in Minnesota, you should contact the DNR or the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Do not keep any of it. The authorities will handle the carcass, determine the cause of death, and send it to the National Eagle Repository, where its parts can be used for religious and ceremonial purposes by qualified Native Americans. Do not touch or move the bird unless absolutely necessary for safety, and if you must wear gloves, handle it minimally. There we go.
You know, it was a very special thing. It was a very special thing to how much we respect. I mean, most people respect an eagle. Yeah. I did not even consider just even barely touching the feathers with my fingers.
Did you wait till they came?
No, I said, well, I'll wait here. And she said, well, he'll be there pretty soon. And I had to go somewhere. So what I did is I wrote with my finger, please leave DNR on the way in the snow. Oh. So somebody didn't take it. I was really worried about someone might take it for the feathers.
Coming up, we have National Native News. We have a story about how hundreds of evacuees from Western Alaska are staying in Anchorage hotels after last month's storms destroyed their homes. Stay tuned for that story.
Starting in 2026, tax rules related to charitable giving are shifting. This means right now might be the right time to give KAXE and other nonprofits checks with a financial advisor to see if it's a good time for you to make a gift. Your support keeps people-powered radio strong and ensures the bright future of KAXE.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Thanksgiving is a holiday that often gives Native people mixed feelings. Brian Bull of Buffalo's Fire shares a few perspectives from across Indian country.
On one hand, the romanticized depiction of pilgrims and Indians happily feasting together in 1621 sidesteps the wars, disease, displacement, and oppression that came in the centuries afterwards. Some Native people boycott Thanksgiving, and the United American Indians of New England will hold their annual Day of Mourning this year, a protest held in Plymouth, Massachusetts since 1970. On the other hand, Native people love to eat with friends and family. What is one to do? Anne Marie Dakota is the Indigenous Curriculum and Instruction Specialist for Bismarck Public Schools. A member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa, Dakota helps educators teach about Thanksgiving from a more authentic Native perspective. And her family reframes holidays like Thanksgiving and the 4th of July to be more relevant to them.
So instead of celebrating the holidays, they celebrate still being here, the survival, the ancestor histories. They acknowledge what happened to us. That's one thing that I would like to push, that we're still here and that's why we still celebrate, to keep our language, stories, and culture alive.
And that Thanksgiving turkey might be pushed aside to make room for fry bread, Indian tacos, and Dakota's personal favorite, wild rice casserole. Someone else is giving the holiday a lot of thought is Nancy Kelsey, an Anishinaabe of the Little River Band of Ottawa Indians and a columnist for Cleveland's Plain Dealer newspaper. She thinks it's important Native people reflect on the holiday and make it their own.
Given all of the centuries of labor on our ancestors' part for us to be here as thriving people, there is no wrong way to celebrate Thanksgiving. We can make the holiday into something that is special for us.
Kelsey says allies, including teachers, can learn about the tribes native to the lands they stand on, lift up and celebrate Indigenous storytellers, and speak up when racist and ignorant things happen. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
The Gila River Indian community has long relied on convenience stores to feed its 13,000 residents, who otherwise may have to drive as far as half an hour away to neighboring cities with grocery stores. But as KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, a new market, a decade in the making, has opened much closer to home.
This isn't a Bash's, it's not a Safeway or a Walmart.
Duncan Winston with Gila River Development says the tribe's new 14,000 square foot supermarket in the heart of Sacaton is much more than a store. It's a symbol of their sovereignty, since few, if any, tribes outright own their own grocers.
We don't want to leave that in the hands of a larger chain to determine who gets what. We want to be able to fight for ourselves and bring the necessary goods to our community when we need them.
From fresh produce and butchered meats to a deli serving local favorites, like the Works Burger.
One of the biggest demands from the community was you got to bring the Works back, and so we've done that.
But that doesn't come cheap because of what some refer to as resflation.
We have experienced it here. I mean, it's difficult finding reputable vendors who are willing to bring us goods and services at a fair price. Although we are rural, we are a lot closer to the metropolitan Phoenix area than a lot of the other tribes in Arizona.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News, you hear it weekday mornings at this time. We've got local news coming up with the Up North Report. Also, congratulations to a couple of dancers, Red Lake dancers, that were in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Oh, cool.
Ivy and Selena were dancing through the streets of New York City. They had jingle dresses, and it's pretty cool. I actually saw that part.
Hmm.
I don't know why. I put the Macy's Day Parade on.
What time might it start?
I don't know. I mean,
as a kid, I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait.
Yeah, it's so weird and hokey, but people seem to. And there's like celebrities in the crowd, and then I didn't really like it, so I wasn't sure why I had it on. You
did
know?
You say Casey and the Sunshine Band was there or what?
Yeah, and they have to lip sync, right? Because, I mean,
yeah, you can't.
You know, we're sound professionals, right? Mm-hmm, I mean, mm-hmm. You can't. It was cold. Like, they're all wearing hats, and, you know, and so your voice probably isn't going to be as good.
Right.
And the sound. But they have microphones and stuff in their ears, and Casey guy, you know, they're up on a float doing Celebrate, and everyone's jamming out. Hoda's going nuts, you know, this whole thing.
His mouth is off.
And he's playing guitar, but you know he's not playing guitar. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I don't know. Jewel singing her one hit.
One hit? Really, Jewel?
Lip syncing.
How early do they check to find out who they can get to be on the parade?
I mean, they had some great. Jonathan Groff from his Broadway play was doing Bobby Darin. That was great. And there was the marching bands are the thing to watch. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Yeah, so. I was just kind of in and out doing stuff and had it on in the background.
Who were the masters of ceremonies?
Hoda.
Like, I don't know who
Al
Hoda
Roka.
Is.
Hoda from the Today Show.
I don't know who Hoda is.
Okay. Al Roker.
Oh, okay.
And Savannah Guthrie.
I don't know who Savannah Guthrie is either.
They're all from it was the Today Show. That's.
And they all had scarves on. They were mm-hmm. all warm and happy.
Yeah. I don't know why. It just seemed like I used to watch it as a kid and I thought, well, this will be interesting.
Hmm. I love the floats. I mean, the balloons.
Mm-hmm.
I love watching the balloons.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Would you ever go to it in person? I bet it's a pretty spectacular thing to actually go to.
Yeah, if I could go sit in a building and look out a window,
yeah.
Like five stories up, yes.
The
I'm not
crowds?
Standing on the street. I mean, it's got to be insane, the crowds. And good. It's good. They were very cautious about safety, so nothing happened, which is great. They're worried about that being some sort of tragic event. So,
oh, I didn't. Okay.
Good for that.
Coming up, we'll have the talkback segment. We've got also some, tell you about some live music in our region and local news. Happy Friday.
This is the set list on KAXE, where we highlight live music around the area for the upcoming week. I'm Malachi Coons. We are taking a look at four shows this Friday and Saturday, November 28th and 29th in Grand Rapids and La Porte. First up, Doyle Turner and Sarah Morris are playing at the Popple Bar in La Porte Friday at 6 p.m. The pair collaborated on Turner's latest Paper Maps release, and Morris just put out a new album called Say Yes in October. Both are talented songwriters and singers who blend jazz, pop, and Americana. Friday in La Porte at the Popple Bar. Next up, a pair of Mankato songwriters are playing at Rapids Brewing Friday night at 6. Nate Boots is an Americana and folk musician who has led bands like the High Horses and Porchlights. He just released a solo album called A Stretch of a Wing, a Leap. Murphy is an up-and-coming folk rocker who recently released a great new single called Sugar. Nate Boots and Mal Murphy in Grand Rapids this Friday. It's a busy night in Rapids, with Brothers Burn Mountain coming to Clocko Brewing at 7 p.m. The eclectic duo from Cotton, Minnesota recently released a best-of album to celebrate their 25-year anniversary. Their live show features a drum-heavy mix of psychedelic blues, rock, and folk music. Friday at 7 p.m. Finally, Dave Simonette is playing at the Rife Center in Grand Rapids Saturday at 7. The Trampled by Turtles frontman is returning after a sold-out Dead Man Winter show in early 2024. Since then, he released 5 new original songs recorded by both Trampled and Dead Man Winter, and collaborated with Alan Sparhawk of Low. It is Dave Simonette this Saturday at the Rife Center in Grand Rapids. The set list is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Coming up at 9 o'clock, we've got Headwaters with Malachi Coons, followed by Minnesota Mixtape. Special today, it is for Native American Heritage Day, I believe. I'm checking it here. Native American Heritage Day special with musicians like Annie Humphrey, Corey Medina, Keith Sokola, and many more. That's all right, coming up at 10 o'clock for Minnesota Mixtape. I'm Heidi Holton with John Bauer.
I want to thank the Bagley Area Arts Collaborative, offering the community exhibits, workshops, and many events, bagleyarts.org. Also want to thank the Grassroots Concert Series, presenting Jack Klatt on Friday, December 5th at 7 p.m. at the Livewell Nightclub and Coffee Bar located at the Journey Church in Nisswa. Doors open at 6:30. The full fall lineup can be found at grassrootsconcerts.org.
Got a text in about the Macy's Day Parade. Lots of disappointed viewers. Too many commercials. I agree.
Oh, yeah.
I mostly kept it on mute because I didn't want to do that. But not enough parade was one of the biggest complaints.
What do you mean by that? They didn't show a lot of the parade? Like, just,
I guess. Maybe it's more the Today Show people. Yeah. I don't know. I sort of had it on. It's just that it was a surprise that I had it on at all for some reason. I started early in the day, so I was like, oh, maybe I'll put this on. Thanks so much for tuning in. You can text us this morning. Join us, 218-326-1234. We heard from Susan from Cotton, who says, years ago when I worked at the zoo, I received a phone call from someone who said they were a Native American elder. They asked for some of our eagle feathers. I replied, we were not able to do that since all of our eagle feathers had to go to the USDA. Turns out the call was them checking on us.
Whoa.
Nice. You passed, Susan.
No kidding. I hope you got a raise. That.
There we go.
Wow. So, yeah, I want to share one thing that happened at the dinner table last night. There was this young man who I went to school with. He's not a young man anymore, but he was talking about, he was on his way to a job interview, but he was walking with the people that were interviewing him, okay? There were 3 people, and they're just having idle chit-chat, and they're in this real tranquil place, camp life, and he found a piece of a bubblegum wrapper on the ground, and he picked it up and put it in his pocket, just, you know, picked up the garbage. That got him the job.
Yeah.
That one thing got him the job. So that was kind of some of the things he tries to teaches students. He's a professor at Clemson University. Just little things like that can make an unbelievable difference.
Well, and it's an interesting world we live in where people put their entire lives on social media, and that is a fairly normal thing. When you apply for a job, they're going to look at your social media.
Yeah.
See if it kind of fits what they're hiring for.
Yeah, so if you're wearing a Coors Light hat with a you know, those old hats that used to make macrame hat, crochet
made
hat.
Out of cans. Yeah.
You might not get the job.
Unless
you
it's
might
for
too.
Course,
maybe it's
know?
For marketing, you know, yeah. Maybe you got to play your cards right. I'm sorry I interrupted you. Oh, yes. Yeah. Talkback time. It's time for the Talkback segment of the morning show. And also, we'd love to hear from you this morning. It's kind of two-way radio. It's kind of a loose Friday. And if you have something you'd like to share, just text us 218-326-1234. And if you want to talk to us, you certainly can do that as well. Use the same number. But you can email us for comments at kaxe.org, or you can text us 218-326-1234, as people have during our talkback segment.
Julie from New Hope donated late last week and said, I love Green Cheese on the River with the unique songs and ham radio. Keep it going. I love it. And thank you.
We also heard from David Nevis. He said, KAXE is the best thing about northern Minnesota. And there are many, many great things about northern Minnesota. Thanks, David.
Kathy from Grand Rapids texted, thank you, Team KEXE-KBXE, for announcing last night's trombone choir concert at Bemidji State University. My 94-year-old mama and I thought it was great. Mm-hmm. We would not have known about this concert without hearing about it on local radio.
Fantastic. We also heard from Daniel from Bacchus. I love the album of the week. Also, I am grateful for the singing frogs in this spring's and flaming tamaracks and larch in the fall.
Ian from Minneapolis also texted about our album of the week. It has a new school local on the 8s Weather Channel vibe. I love it. Our album of the week, we'll be listening to that, is Vendrin Suaves Uvas by Silvana Estrada. You can find information at kexe.org.
Kathleen wrote a note on her membership renewal, which means you took a little bit of extra effort to say something. She said, I love KAXE. Good luck with the Newsmatch fundraiser. Thanks, Kathleen.